These days, desire is a totally hot topic. Overtly or not, desire gets named in just about every arena of life, from personal intimate relationships to marketing strategies and business plans. In the songs of popular radio and the novels we take to the beach on summer afternoons. From the theoretical of William Irvine's book on desire, Why We Want What We Want, right down to the analyses of theologians such as Sarah Coakley and Wendy Farley. Indeed, these days, consideration of desire seems to be so widespread that I suspect if any one of us were to spend a single day devoted to listening for clues about desire and those attending it, whether that is a question of what we want or what someone is telling us we should want, it would not take long to see why subspecialties in many academic fields have developed to analyze aspects of desire. Neither, I suppose, would it be difficult to imagine how, even in an economy as crippled as ours, the field of advertising, marketing, and public relations still has hundreds of thousands of people earning median salaries well above $100,000 per year. Indeed, assisting Fortune 500 companies to discern, or is it direct, what it is people want, that's big, big business. The Oxford English Dictionary defines desire as the fact or condition of desiring, that feeling or emotion which is directed toward the attainment or possession of some object from which pleasure or satisfaction is expected. Longing, craving, a particular instance of this feeling, a wish. In today's gospel reading, we're offered pictures of at least two people and their desire. First, there is the person in the crowd who comes to Rabbi Jesus asking him to help settle some familial dispute. The man tells Jesus to intervene. "Tell my brother," he begins. And presumably, this instruction intercedes on his own behalf so that the family inheritance will be divided with him. Now, regulations from Numbers and Deuteronomy spell out very clearly the way these things are to go. Yet something this man has perceived about Jesus suggests he should seek him out as a kind of probate referee. Jesus will have none of it. But then, curiously enough, though he patently refuses the role of judge and arbitrator, Jesus goes on. He goes on to dole out a fairly judgment-oriented admonition and story. Taking the man's question and the all-too-familiar, evidently age-old experience of family disputations over settling inheritances, Jesus turns around and speaks to everyone there. "Take care," Jesus urges. "Take care, be on your guard against all kinds of greed, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of possessions." Now, we probably need to clarify that we do not know that the man who sought Jesus' assistance was consumed with desire for the assets, the money, the land, the animals of his father's estate. We do not know that he was driven by greed. Evidently, though, Jesus went with some level of that assumption, or at least he used the man's question as a kind of foil, as a way of addressing his followers concerning fundamental teachings in the dominion of God. "Take care. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed." Jesus says, remember, one's life does not consist in the abundance of possessions. Quickly then, Jesus tells that story about a man who was very rich because his land produced abundantly. With all his grain and all his goods, the man's barns were stuffed to overflowing. And just so the story says, the man plotted out a way to tear down the old and build new, larger barns for all he owned. At this, the man had contented himself with what he had and how it would allow him to relax, to eat, drink, and be merry. But as well we know, the story ends as God calls in the man's life that very night. And a new question of inheritance is laid out when God says, and the things you have prepared, whose will they be? Whose will they be? My best guess is that those of us with deep pockets, that's you and I here in Cambridge, we likely cringe whenever this story is told. We think about the size of our house or our storage unit, our offices and the shelves overflowing with books. We likely cringe. Or maybe we just close our ears. It's a really hard one. This is a really hard story for us to hear. It's hard because deep down we realize that we are among the world's wealthiest people. Those of us who make even $48,000 a year rank in the top 1%. The top 1% of the wealthiest people in the world. Of course, there are lots of people well above us, many with disposable wealth we can't even begin to imagine. I heard that the Clinton wedding this weekend was estimated to cost several million dollars. And yet, that relativity should only go so far, only so far to mitigate the impact of this story. It is important, my friends. It is so important for us to hear this story with its inherent warning against greed, and to differentiate between the warning against greed and wealth. So let us hear it clearly. Let us hear it clearly. For starters, we realize that Jesus does not, at least in this story, Jesus does not decry the man's wealth. Now, the guy in the parable is not considered villainous for having succeeded. His mistake in the end does not have to do with wealth. Rather, he goes astray by believing that his wealth can secure his future, can make him independent, independent from others, from need, from God. And in the end, this story and its place among the fundamental teachings of the dominion of God, it has less to do with whether one has possessions than how it is one holds them. Further, it is not a story that says that desire for things is altogether wrong, but it does differentiate between desire that will be for life and desire that ultimately devours or demeans one's life. In the end, the man in the parable is deemed a fool because he counts his possessions as something to secure, to guarantee his well-being. In the story, he refers time and again to what some call the unholy trinity of me, myself, and I. And so we learn that the fool's concerns are driven by independence and self-sufficiency, total contrasts to what God desires, to what God desires for us, total contrasts to to the ways of God's dominion. Take care, Jesus says. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of possessions. I recently heard the story of a woman who told her friends about the great treasure her mother left when she died. The woman had been born into a household of 12. Materially, they seemed to have what could be described as little to nothing. Food, clothes, and shelter usually were sufficient, but never plentiful, sumptuous, or abundant. Late in her life, this woman's mother died, and she told about the inherited treasure. Her friends couldn't believe their ears. "That can't be," they exclaimed. Was there some secret stash of wealth the family never had tapped? Some investment that never had been exchanged for an easier way of life? No. The woman explained to her friends that the treasure her mother left came by way of example and teaching how to live. In sum, the encouragement always to be kind and generous. A great treasure. Whether or not she ever had heard Jesus' parable of the rich fool, it seems to me this woman knew the meaning of the story and of its prior admonition. Deep in her soul, even in her lack of possessions, she knew. She knew life did not consist of them. Perhaps in thinking on her, and on the rich fool too, you and I might come this week to new awareness about what our lives do consist of, ultimately seeking out what we desire, what we treasure, what holds our lives securely. Even as we so seek, may God's desire for us remain ever in our hearts. Amen.